Hi, everybody. This is Dean Hagler from the Opposites of Rational Exuberance here in the heart of the historic core in the middle of the Art Deco wonder known as the Eastern Columbia. And this is your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. And I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Noofity Noof, Mr. Ocho Cinco, Mr. Phil Lernes. How are you, sir?
I am good. Do you know that Chad Johnson, the wide receiver who changed his name to Ocho Cinco, which is what prompted my silliness all those years ago now, that I guess he's now legally changing his name back from Ocho Cinco to Chad Johnson.
Really? He thought that was a bad idea?
Yeah.
It suddenly dawned on him.
Because his numbers as a receiver were better when he had a real person's name rather than just the name of his jersey number. But again, of course, as we know, 85 is not actually Ocho Cinco.
That's right.
Ocho Cinco means 8-5.
And did he not watch The Prisoner? I am not a number, I am a man. What is that about?
I'm sure Chad Johnson, receiver for the Cincinnati Bengals, was a huge BBC television in the 1960s.
Could happen.
Yeah.
Could happen.
What he really liked about it, though, was the allegory of man's inhumanity in a man.
Which is such the football allegory, isn't it?
So the exciting thing is, no matter how people are listening to us, whether it be on Jackalope Radio or on The Cockroach, the internet's talk superstation at talksuperstation.com, or whether they're subscribing via iTunes, or listening to us from our site, chillpackhollywood.com.
Somehow.
Where you can download and stream. And again, there's a subscription button to the iTunes there. No matter how they listen to us, they actually are able to listen to us.
Isn't that amazing? I'm not sure exactly how we cobbled that together this week in terms of internet engineering. You know, sometimes your skills just are slightly out of your grasp, and yet somehow you're achieving that?
Because you have to.
You have to. You somehow have to cobble this
thing. There has to be a way to make this work, and you make it work. I've experienced this with anybody who makes movies and uses Final Cut Pro experiences this all the time.
Right.
Like, you get these error messages that could not be less specific.
Right. And general errors.
So you
happen.
Go to all these discussion forums and you hear all these theories and all these things sound really good, but they all lead you to the place that what you need to do can't be done.
Yep.
So you decide, I have to ignore this because I have to do that. I have no choice. This has to work.
It has to work.
So you just find a way to make it work.
Yes.
And you don't know. Unfortunately, it's not necessarily a repeatable solution.
Yeah, I know. That's the bad thing. And also, this whole thing needs a bit of streamlining. So that's going to be coming up also.
So we've got some changes that will still be made to our site.
Yeah.
Indeed, this is Chill Pack Hollywood Hour number 197 today.
Right.
Right now, Chill Pack Hollywood Hours 1 through 171 are not available
at the moment,
and some will not be available for quite some time. We prided ourselves on the fact that people could come and listen to all our old shows, and quite apparently, based on the analytics, they do enjoy listening to the old shows
when we were younger.
But we will be bringing several of those back each month, and so eventually, yes, all your Chill Pack Hollywood Hours
will be yours again.
Will be yours again.
Wouldn't that be nice?
And we're not going to get into details about it now, but as a little teaser, we are we not, preparing a little something special that will not be available on the web. It'll only be available direct to our listeners who say to us that they want it, but it's a very special thing we're putting together in anticipation of our milestone 4 years of changing the way people listen to the internet.
Yep, that's going to be something. I don't know how we're going to do that and where we're going to find the time, because so much is happening.
Oh, so much is happening. You know, we have a sneak preview screening of our movie.
Shh, don't tell anyone.
It's a special
sneak preview.
Look, it's just between you, me, and our legion of listeners.
Yes.
Yes.
Who may be in the San Francisco area.
It's at an event, UFO X-Fest's Quest for Truth.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can find information about it at both UFO X-Fest, that's UFO, letter X, F-E-S-T,
right,
.com, Or historicballtheater.com, B-A-L, historicballtheater.com. Right. It's this gorgeous old picture palace.
Oh, I can't wait to see it.
A weekend-long event, The Quest for Truth, is taking place, and as part of that event, they'll have lots of speakers and presentations, and one presentation is a 2.5-hour screening followed by a little dog and pony show.
Little dog and pony show.
I don't know whether you're the dog and I'm the pony or what.
I'm the pony, you're the dog.
Well, I think we're both kind of, because you're the show pony and I'm the workhorse. See what
mule.
I did?
Drug mule.
Drug mule. That's you. So that's going on this weekend, and it's really kind of cool not only to be able to show it to that audience, because I think it's sort of a love letter to that audience.
Yeah.
But also, you know, a really great chance, because we've been working with someone super talented and super cool doing our color corrections and our online and our mastering.
And he's listening.
And I don't know.
I don't know.
But you know, we held off on mastering the finished film because, hey, we have the sneak preview screening. Let's see how it looks projected before we decide
exactly what we want.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe there will be a few tweaks that we want to make to the color
tweaking.
And
yes, maybe turn it all red. Maybe just make my hair red. Wouldn't that be good?
Now that you're American. Red, white, and blue.
Yes.
Like our old friend Luke White Thompson used to have. He used to have the red, white, and blue hair.
See?
In the early days of LYT rules.
Awesome.
Now, last week we spoke, you know, in addition to all these changes. Oh, wait. You've got to tell me about this because were on the phone last night and you... well, actually, we ran into each other at a very special event that we'll talk about and you told me about this, but... But before we let go of the changes on our site, you know, I had in our blog previewing last week's show, because we knew that it might not be available for a while, in our weekly blog on the abandoned amusement park that is the internet, MySpace, at myspace.com/chillpackhollywood, each weekend I post a blog previewing the coming week's show. And I evoked, Terminator 2, Judgment Day, about Skynet coming. I evoked Y2K, all these, you know, computer-based doom scenarios and the post-apocalyptic landscapes. And really...
Came true.
Aside from it taking a little bit of time, and we knew we were going to lose access to 171 of our shows for a matter of time. We knew those things were in the cards in this changeover, in becoming our own men and going independent.
Damn them!
But we were kind of shocked at how little carnage there was.
Yeah.
Until you get a message from a contact person at our old network.
Yeah, saying, did you just delete the log box? Which I didn't even know we had a log box in our tank. So, to make it simple, every show we just sort of put in an FTP tank, and it magically appears, and everyone can hear it around the world. It's magic of the internet. So, we're taking all those shows off, so I'm simply being polite, as a Canadian, and deleting the shows so they have lots of room in their servers, and we're not taking up space, because we're no longer there. We're going to the new one. So, as I do that, of course, it makes sense to remove the log box, the box that perhaps has the logs of me putting those shows in there. So, I remove that. And that, lo and behold, collapses the entire network. The one box somehow makes it so that no other show can be heard at all. I get this panicked email. Oh my God, what'd you do? Oh, I think we corrected it. But it seems that it's a rather precarious network situation when one user has the power to crush it all.
Yeah, and also seems a little unrealistic. I mean...
Well, you said that.
You know, because what I'd been experiencing in anticipation of you deleting all of the shows, right, was I was downloading all the shows into MP3 format so that I would have all of them.
Right.
And so that I can put them back up again at some point. And of course, if anybody who listens to us emails us at chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com, chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com, and says, you know what, that episode that you did that had da-da-da-da-da, something on it, or, for example, I mean, I don't know, like the Lone Gunman reunion show, or something like that, or Live in Berlin, or
it's easy to find.
You know, I can, via you send it, I can send them the MP3. Yep. It's like, you know, 50 megabytes or whatever.
Easy.
And can send it. So we can get those files to listeners who want them anyway. But as you were deleting them, I was attempting to download them. And this is before you deleted them, of course. And the problem that I was facing was that the Farpoint Media server couldn't be accessed. Their site was down. Our site was intermittent until the switchover. We were having so much problem with them leading up to the switchover.
Yeah.
So all the real nightmare doomsday scenario, it was like if Y2K had turned out not to be the problem, but just having 1999 as the date on your computer.
That's right.
Turns out, who knew that there was a bug in that 1999 was the problem?
All the programmers panicking before Y2K was screwing up the system. That sort of was our little model.
Because it turns out that Prince had actually trademarked 1999. So all computer files went into default.
Right to Sony Music. Yep.
Awesome. So that was kind of funny. Now,
funny.
Where did I run into you last night?
Why, we were at the Chinese Man Theater, weren't we? Part of the...
Okay, that makes it sound like a Chinese dude owns the theater. It's not a Chinese Man Theater.
No, it's Man
Theater. Man Theater Chains.
Yeah, okay.
Chinese Six Theater.
Yeah. Not a
so
Chinese
named
man
in honor of next door, the world famous Grauman's Chinese Theater.
Right.
Where the hands and the footprints are.
Right.
So it's
he
yeah, man Chinese theater, not Chinese man.
Oh, no wonder everybody was looking
at
me.
I was at a Turkish man's theater, and I'm not going to fill in a joke there. That was, I think, your phone.
No.
Oh, I should have turned off my phone.
Turn off your phone. What did we learn from doing podcasts?
Yeah, it was going to be static. That was going to be my fault.
900 shows later, you still got your phone on.
25 shows later, really, as anybody can access.
Right.
So what were we doing
there? We were there for the Italian Film Festival, which is odd to have it...
Not a film festival. Oh. L.A. Italia Festival. It's an entire cultural festival.
I did not know
all
that.
All the arts fashion and yeah.
I will be able to get cheap Italian meals this week for part of the festival. Anyone?
Again, word choice. Perhaps...
Can I get Italian meals?
Abundant Italian meals for free is what you mean.
I see.
Because these events and all of these are for free.
They were
it's
for free.
It's to showcase the best of Italian and Italian-American culture.
How did they afford that? I thought we were in a global recession, and yet here, free movies happening all week leading up to the Oscars.
You know, all jokes aside, especially, ethnic stereotyping jokes aside.
I haven't made any.
No, every explanation I'm about to give you could lend themselves so dangerously to these things. But Italy is such a fascinating country, not only culturally, but politically and economically, because here's a country that five or six constitutional crises since the end of World War II.
Right.
Where they've thrown out the Constitution and had to start over again. And imagine that. Imagine if something like that happened in this country. I
where
mean,
you, like,
the
throw
panic in the streets.
Oh, yeah.
But Italy, life goes on.
Right. They still...
Just their history being what it is, it's like, okay, whatever's going on politically, that's fine. They got to fix that. But we still have to live our lives.
I know.
So they figure out a way to live that life.
It's amazing.
Resiliently, and not only resiliently, but in a celebratory fashion.
True.
In a lot of ways. I mean, and that's, you know, strikes again at the heart of this cultural festival. So how do they do it? I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's what makes Italian culture one of the things that makes it so fabulous.
And here are all
it's
these movies.
It's an abundant culture no matter the circumstances.
All these movies that don't have any distribution deals, often some you would never have seen anywhere else. I was interested in seeing that Rasputin film.
Was that right beforehand?
No, that comes out tonight, I think.
Oh, I see. Because something that was going on right beforehand had Joey Pants come out of it.
Oh, is that right?
I bumped into Joey Pantoliano.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Was he in it? I don't know.
I don't know. He was just coming out of the theater.
Anyway, it was Atlantis Down, and we've talked about that movie before on this here show, and it's a movie that I was in that was shot in Virginia, where it's set in a space shuttle, and the crew mysteriously disappears, and that's all I can say without being a spoiler alert guy again. So
I will say that the name is a misnomer. Atlantis down, because the space shuttle doesn't go down. You're right.
No, it just stays in orbit.
Yeah.
And we disappear.
Yeah, the people disappear. Or do they?
Or do they? Mm. Maybe. I don't know. Way to spoil it.
It is a reminder of why those of us who love science fiction love science fiction.
It's great that actually you saw it, because, you know, from my perspective, it's like I have a very different experience of it, like you do any project that you're very close
to. But you were very pleasantly surprised when you saw it, because you never know how these things are going to turn out.
True.
And, you know, it... I don't like to deal strictly in the positive, so let me hit with the negative right away.
It's true.
You know, we did a show a few weeks ago over at Rocketworks,
yes,
the boutique sound house that is the best friend independent filmmakers could have, because of the fact that nothing can destroy a movie so quickly like bad sound.
Right.
And independent filmmakers, it's really tough, because even as the playing field is leveled visually and in so many other ways,
technologically,
and in fact in some ways favors independence, like mm-hmm. I brought up beforehand, you know, it's not a coincidence, I don't think, that my old friend Matt Labatique, who has shot so many $200 million budgeted films, action movies and big films like Inside Man for Spike Lee and Iron Man and, you know, all these things, gets his first Oscar nomination doing a low-budget independent film, Black Swan, gets nominated for Best Cinematography. Because the playing field, like I said, has leveled.
Yeah.
And also because you don't have the money to throw at solutions of how are we going to create this, you have to throw your own imagination and creativity and skill at it. And now that the tools are available, boy, when you can get access to the same kind of tools that the big boys are using, but you approach them with a wealth of imagination and creativity, you can have something that really stands
something
out.
Yeah.
Sound, on the other hand, continues to be something where you get what you pay for.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, Rocketworks, again, is such a good friend, because whatever your schedule, whatever your budget, they will find a way to work with you. Because they recognize this, that
sound is so crucial.
With the exception of comedy.
Mm-hmm. And even then, you want to hear the jokes.
Well, yeah, the timing can be interrupted by sound. But why I say the exception of comedy is that in comedy, even roughness, rough texture, you know, the seams showing, to a certain degree, sometimes things that are too polished lose sort of their heartbeat a
right.
bit comedically. But with drama or anything that asks you to think or go to a bad sound can pull you out of it.
Totally. And totally. Pops, hisses, all those sort of things.
So this was the problem with an
right.
Atlantis down.
Oh,
but
pizza.
When I make this criticism, it doesn't mean to doom the film, because, for example, other things, if a distributor picks this up, one of the things that they can do is say, you know what we're going to do? We're going to spend $25,000 to redo the sound.
Yeah.
Remember when Robert Rodriguez made El Mariachi?
El Mariachi,
how
right?
much money was thrown into building a professional sound
Absolutely.
For that film, which really helped it.
The whole thing in the press was he only spent $2,000, $3,000 making this movie. But when it got picked up by the studio, they dropped $100,000 back into that production specifically to correct the sound. Nothing else. They love the raw texture.
Yeah.
They love the crazy editing where characters suddenly disappear. They love all that. But what stays, what goes is the sound, the resound mix.
Yeah, so anyway, so the thing about it that's so much fun is that what's great about science fiction historically and why we love it is that
it defines society
at its best, and its best does not mean necessarily 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Right. So that was really good.
Its best means at its most thoughtful, at its most adventuresome,
mm-hmm.
at its most questioning, the most embracing of mystery, all these things, it opens us in such a way that even when limitations of budget are present, think costumes in Forbidden Planet, for
yes.
example, or something like that, no matter how cheesy it can get, you still go, But it's cool.
But it's cool.
But I love it.
Right. You can suspend that disbelief long enough.
Classic Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know, look, of course there's the cheesy elements and the rubber monsters. And it's,
right.
But to a degree, that almost proves how great it is.
It's true, right?
Because that you still get sucked in by not only the characters and the action, but the story and the ideas. It resonates no matter how old you are. You find new things to appreciate about it.
Which is what I loved in the original series when they're at the gunfight at OK Corral. That's the whole point, right? That there are these fake facades, and yet they're sucked into being killed in a gunfight.
That's the episode that I thought of. While watching Atlantis Down.
Because the sets are
there
so cheesy?
There is a certain sense of the... not because the sets are cheesy, but because they said... Again, how do you get around the necessity of building a believable environment that'll pass that muster on the part of the audience? Well, this film is deeply psychological, so... You ignore that question altogether.
And save so much money.
And you realize that, no, how do we believably depict the psychology of whomever we're seeing the world, you know, through whomever's eyes we're seeing the world?
Yeah, yeah.
How do we depict that psychological point of view?
And that was a smart move for an independent and low-budget film.
But it also gets back to why we love science fiction. Because they do it. That's more interesting anyway.
Yeah.
Right? But in addition to comparing it to, like, kind of Star Trek, you know, I tweeted about it.
You did?
It's Solaris plus Lost equals Atlantis Down. And I don't mean the George Clooney Solaris. I mean the good one.
The Russian one.
It's also Cube,
right.
The Canadian horror film, science fiction horror film. Cube plus 2001. Equals Atlantis Down.
Wow. Now that's...
Anyway, it's fun. It's one of those things where really, even when it doesn't work, it's still cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
So
there you go. Well, it's called Atlantis Down. Good luck on finding it. I'm sure that if you contact Max Bartoli directly, he'll burn you a copy for a couple of...
I'm sure they're going to be releasing it.
You think so?
Of course. Why not?
I don't think they got a distribution deal.
Well, but they've not bothered to try to show it very much yet.
I don't know if that's true. No. Okay, maybe not. I know it's...
Well,
from...
we should talk to them then.
Hey.
Yeah.
Why not?
We should promote this.
We're that thing. Okay. Right.
You know, I bought huge HD screen.
You did?
And
what'd you do with
Blu-ray,
the old one?
What I did with the old one doesn't matter.
Well,
but I did this because...
You had a nice old screen. I mean, that was a nice
screen. I did, but I needed a much bigger one. And
because what? Wait a second. We were just having this discussion earlier about consumer culture. And
fact that when we were in post on Truth Is Out There, and I was seeing the uncompressed HD after it had been color corrected and was, you know, during that the online process, and I was seeing things that I'd never seen before. I'd watched much of our dailies on my old screen.
Yeah.
Realized a bigger one really helps. And it's for our documentary, even though there are certain moments when, oh God, I can read. Like, you and I are smart. We're old hands at this sort of thing. We have a camera set up. We're on a panel discussion in Berlin. We know to keep our water bottles, the backs towards the camera so that the label's towards us. Remember how far away we were from the camera?
Yeah, huge.
I can read every single word on the label. And, of course, this is a film that's going to be projected in a theater. You can see not only the brand, you can see... the leader, you can see all the mineral, you can see, read everything on that label.
My spittle, you can see my spittle.
Just on my new TV.
Oh my God.
So anyway, so I realized, look, we're going to be shooting other things, and we're going to be shooting narrative pieces in the next few months. I need this. And also to be able to interface where, although I have an HD screen for the Final Cut editing, okay, I can take the media, and now I can just turn around, send it to that monitor, much like we were doing in post. And I can do a quality control on it.
The great thing about buying stuff is you can justify anyway. Oh, I'm kidding. What'd you pay for such a thing? How big? 50 inches? What'd you get? 40, 42? 50? You got a 50-inch 1080p
yeah.
HD monitor screen, flat screen with the energy saver LED output, so you're not burning. Let me just make a guesstimate. And you bought it maybe online.
Maybe you're I'm gonna write down a number. It'd be like, and then you can guess my weight. And if you're within 3 pounds,
I get it. I get the TV and the weight.
So while you're writing all that down,
yep.
You know, one of the things on the Blu-ray, you can stream the Netflix directly to the
TV, got that feature,
which is what Blu-ray players are networked.
And, yeah.
But the TV itself is networked too, so I didn't even need to do it through the Blu-ray.
So someone out there knows exactly what you're watching at any given moment.
But it's fascinating because, you know, we're seeing these films in such a way that they were never meant to be seen.
It's true.
We really are.
Right. It's true.
And I remember, you know, my horror of seeing 2001 in Blu-ray on a 100-inch screen, and I could see the handprints on the matte paintings where they'd cleaned it.
No.
Just when Keir Dulay is walking through the hotel room at the end in his visor, just a quick little shot, you can clearly make out all the cables, the feet of the crew members, all these things that you could never see in 70mm projection.
Right.
It just, these things are not meant to be seen this way. And it's really, but what are you going to do?
What are you going
to
do?
Yeah. And so again, this is why needing to have these things, people are going to be watching this way. We need to know how this stuff looks.
Ouch.
Because we can always assess downward.
Yeah.
Look, how's it going to look small?
Right, on
how's
my phone.
But in its most revealing, what's it going to look like? We need to know.
That really is disappointing me that 2001 is all modeled.
But I watched, the first thing I streamed on the new TV via Netflix.
Porn?
Kind of. Michael Jackson's This Is It. It does feel a little like
totally
necrophilia.
Oh, Jesus. I could not get through that thing. How did you even sit through it?
Well, it was much like... I found it to be much like the man himself. It was...
Oddly...
Not oddly.
Like a
card-wrecky... very interesting. In the level of talent and skill...
Yeah.
Impressive. Bordering on awe-inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
The presentation, somewhat cold and standoffish, but intriguing.
Yeah.
And yet, all of it constantly posing questions.
Disturbing questions.
That will never get answered
ever.
And I don't want to get into MJ's personality.
Okay,
again. I don't need to do this, but it really is interesting in that way. And it's fascinating also how that film just does not end. They don't want to let him die.
Yes.
And that, exactly. It's true. Every time they come close to doing it in his memory, he comes back in the film. And then it's fascinating. But I was thinking about something that I always thought about, but you look back at all this stuff, and one of the weird things about Michael Jackson was that he changed his look so much through such drastic means. And it's fascinating how, like, you look at the early, mid-90s Michael Jackson when he was doing, like, the Black or White video, when that was a great song, and that was the name of the song, and it also described him most perfectly.
Right.
Black or white, it doesn't matter.
And
neither would be the answer.
Right.
But you look at that now and you go, oh, he looked pretty good there.
Really?
But of course, when that came out, I was like, oh my God, what's he done to himself?
I know.
You know, and you look back at Thriller and you go, oh, that's when he looked good. But then, of course, by Thriller, there'd already been so many changes.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? It's like, actually had the experience in This Is It, I swear. And this is the most bizarre thing to think about. He's at the end of his ropes. And of course, they're keeping a certain distance in shooting.
Yeah.
But there's some kind of scary looking shots of him. But I'm still thinking to myself, oh, you know, he looked all right when he was still alive.
Right. We have changed our, the Housewives of Jersey Shore and all of those commercials for plastic surgeons that are our model agency. I'm saying that our culture, our idea of manipulating our faces has changed so much that we now accept, you know, way more than what we used to.
Yeah, the bar keeps getting lowered or raised or
because
whatever.
It's always in your face now. It's like everybody and their dog has it done.
It's not a documentary.
No.
It's not a concert film. I don't know what it is, but it really does kind of embody him in a very interesting way.
And it's
it does
a mishmash?
It does bring up all the questions that you have about him, and it's fascinating. I will say this. When I was sick with the flu a couple weeks ago, I watched Lion King on DVD. Watched a bunch of Disney stuff. And I suddenly realized something. Had an epiphany, which was, and maybe other people have realized this before,
probably.
But the really famous moment that Michael Jackson had where he held the baby out over the railing, his baby, supposedly his baby, and then there was talk that it was a doll or whatever it was.
Right, same from the Lion King.
Trouble. But yeah, it was a scene from the Lion King.
Right, where they hold the kid up and it's
I never realized that. Yeah, he was just referencing probably his favorite movie.
I would think that's probably the case. It's like disturbing in so many ways. I think that it was actually done as a mash painting of some sort with the baby hanging upside down from the lion's paw. If I'm not mistaken. And if it's not been done, I'm doing that till later today as an oil painting.
Now, so much news in the world. And let's start with Netflix because we've been talking about it. You said you didn't know about this.
I did not.
That Netflix is at war with all of Canada. I mean, literally all of Canada. The parliament, all the unions, the guilds, the broadcasters, the film distributors. They're all at war trying to block Netflix Canada.
And if I can remind Netflix about the War of 1812, where, in fact, we burnt down the White House, I would suggest that they maybe back off. Anyway, go ahead. What's the war about? I don't even know.
That's interesting. Although this is an article that predates this war, I felt that a phrase in the article kind of summed up basically the motivation behind all. I mean, think about it. Producers and unions getting together to fight a company?
That's crazy.
Imagine that. But Wall Street Journal report in January on Netflix, and a Wall Street Journal report had a very interesting quote that I wrote down, even though they weren't talking about the Canadian battle, but this seemed to sum it up to me. And it's, let's see if I can read it without glasses. I got to go to an eye doctor.
One of these days.
It was a report on Netflix being, quote, a disruptive force in the TV and film industry.
Wow. Wow.
Because streaming takes people away from all other forms of viewing.
Oh, that's true, I guess.
And but it's a model that cannot support the production costs that go into any of these things. More and more people are finding the product through Netflix, are enjoying it through Netflix.
Right.
But it's becoming such a share of the market that there is no viable revenue stream to pay for the product in the first place. What I love about this, of course, is to a certain degree, this is the chickens coming home to roost for distributors who have always screwed not only the artists, but the investors.
As well.
Out of the getting at least their production costs recouped.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And I know... you told me that...
But you want to change how distributors do business? Threaten their livelihood.
Well, exactly. And the size of Netflix grown now, that the fact that they take up 25% of all the world's known bandwidth for streaming suggests that the gravity of what Netflix has done has made this the issue that now I'm surprised Canada is taking up the fight.
They're doing it like... You know, it's kind of like the battles over keeping Walmart out.
Right.
You know, you got to do it early on. They may, if there's already a Netflix Canada, it may already be too late. But like Europe is not ever going to allow Netflix in.
Right.
But they do have their own answer to Netflix that's coming.
Right.
But it's really interesting. And there was a separate Wall Street Journal article in January on Netflix in the financial pages, I guess it's all financial pages, but you know, not news and not entertainment or op-ed, but looking at it as an investment. And it was fascinating because their headline pretty much said it all. It's time to hit the pause button on Netflix as an investment.
As an investment.
Because, and it really got into detail about, you know, what they described as its meteoric overvaluation. As a stock. Because there's such a ceiling to where it can grow.
Well, now take me to some of the nuts and bolts of this.
The production thing about it not being able to pay, the revenue stream not being able to pay for the production, you need no further proof of it than Netflix's own Red Envelope Entertainment. Remember when they were producing and distributing theatrically under Red Envelope? How fast did that go under?
Right. They stopped investing almost instantly.
Because
they realized
they thought, it doesn't matter how these do theatrically. Because we own Netflix. We're going to have an exclusive on these things.
Right. And then No.
So, they could not support their own.
So the idea is I get $8.95 a month and I can watch a million movies as much time as I have. Then don't they have to pay a license fee for each one of those films? And doesn't a little bit of my $8.95 go back to the producers of these movies?
I guess for the streaming. I mean, but it's really interesting when you think about it that, first of all, I don't know. I don't know how their thing works, but the truth is actually that you, if you're not doing a streaming only membership, and very few people I know do a streaming only membership, we all have some kind of DVD membership.
Yeah.
The streaming is free. We're paying for the DVD rentals. We're paying for the Blu-ray rentals. You're doing a one at a time, two at a time, three at a time, four at a time, whatever.
Right.
I do three at a time, plus now I've upgraded to Blu-ray.
Yeah.
The streaming is a free add-on.
But it's still, they still have to pay a license to put that thing on there to stream. Still, I have to be, as a producer, getting some revenue from Netflix in their giant pool of $800 million.
Clearly, but since no one's paying for it,
then they're saying...
How much? Yeah.
Wow. So what you're saying then is I made a $2 million movie and Netflix gives me $20 and that's all I get because they're going to stream it and there's no other revenue coming in, even though millions of people are watching it because it's a stream, instant queue play movie.
And if you don't have it on Netflix, it's almost like it's not out there.
Right, that nobody knows about it because it hasn't showed up in my recent
suggestions. I mean, there's the thing is that Karl Rove, I Love You. When they stopped after a few weeks being willing to send that out and came up with all these reasons why, Amazon leapt at it as a video on demand title. They stream it, but it's still like nobody thinks
to go to Amazon
for it.
Right. I didn't even know Amazon did streaming.
Flash forward though several years, and because Amazon's economic model is so sound, they're not going anywhere. You know. They're going to still be standing, and I don't think
so. Netflix this war will. Then is predicting the end of Netflix, technically.
Nobody's predicting the end of Netflix other than Phil Lernes.
I like it. I'm going to put money on that one. Where you should I put buy gold? What do I buy, Mr.
But you know, this is all it's all becoming the wild, wild west out there. I don't think it's becoming it's very interesting because instead of it becoming what everything seemed to be heading, which is that's media conglomerates, it's now. It's becoming more and more independent out and carving out your own space again.
Right.
Rather than these huge aggregate sites.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, how about the news that Hulu is watched twice as much as all five networks' websites combined?
Is that right?
Like, so you can get right, but it's so dangerous for the networks.
Right.
So that's why they're thinking, okay, maybe we should pull apart
Hulu. I thought
because
NBC
then we
was
can control
on
our revenue stream.
Right. But NBC was part of Hulu.
NBC now is owned by Comcast, so who knows what that relationship's going to be.
Oh, yeah. Who's the daddy there?
It's just really interesting. And then you have, you know, we talked about Keith Olbermann leaving MSNBC.
And going to...
Well, now he went to Current.
I know.
TV. And, of course, we used to talk about Current TV, which was only supposed to be internet-based.
Right.
But like you said from the very beginning, there's no revenue model that makes sense of that. They've got to have an actual network.
Yeah.
And now they have an actual network, and they need some sort of marketing brand.
And bringing it back to Canada, that was CBC News World. It was my favorite news channel, that station that then Current took over and made programs that were completely irrelevant.
So like Howard Stern going to XM or Sirius or whatever, it's Keith Olbermann going to Current, and people are saying, well, one, you can never make money, given what you're paying him, you can never make money off of him. And two, which is what they said about Howard Stern,
right.
And two, you've now branded it as somehow liberal, as if Al Gore owning it wasn't enough. But still, you're saying this, and their reaction was, We need some brand.
Yeah.
We need something that lets people know we're here.
Totally.
It's a loss leader, but at least it anchors us. And meanwhile, wow. At the same time, I thought that this was fascinating as we, you know, so many cross-branding and cross-marketing and all these. Aaron Sorkin's new television series.
Wonder Woman?
No, that's David E. Kelley.
Oh, yeah, right. Sorry. I'm just fixating.
Aaron Sorkin did West Wing.
Yes.
And
now he's doing...
His new one is all about...
Politics?
Keith Olbermann.
No.
Yeah. He wrote it while following Keith Olbermann around back scenes at the Keith Olbermann show.
Are you
countdown,
kidding?
Countdown for a couple months. But it's basically... It's a countdown... It's a fictional countdown series.
Wow. And yeah. Does it get fired at the end of the season one, too? That'd be kind of cool, actually.
I don't know.
I would like to see that whole thing played out on television in a fictional form, even though I could have watched it played out on television had I watched MSNBC, but I don't.
We were having kind of a conversation earlier in our own web tech meeting.
Yes.
As we're
a fabulous web tech meeting coming up, people.
Designing and... No, they're not going to hear it.
Oh, you're not going to hear that.
Yeah.
We're not doing production meetings on the air anymore. We decided...
Well, we are, but that's a production meeting. This was a web tech meeting.
Which is part of production.
Okay.
We're just talking about how it's all...
We were talking about,
together.
Again, about how it being a wild, wild west. And one of the things that came up in the discussion that I had wanted to mention on the show is about YouTube financing channels now.
Yeah.
To create content.
I want to do that.
They're financing celebrity-produced channels.
I'm a celebrity.
In exchange for the ad revenue.
I'm in. What do I do?
People will still get to watch it for free, but it's paid content specifically for YouTube.
Come on.
And then they sell advertising, and they get the advertising revenue.
And what do I get?
I don't know, but we said we weren't going to do it because we don't want our fans to think that we've gone corporate and are selling advertising.
Oh.
Like that way.
Okay. Everything I said up till now, then you're talking about, I take it back.
But we are thinking about a different site that's kind of based on the same... paradigm,
yeah.
That will allow people to be able to stream entertainment that we create,
right?
But without having advertising shoved down their throats.
I hate that you watch a little YouTube screen,
right?
And the key cool stuff information is at the bottom 1/8, just where that freaking ad comes up, and I can't see or I can't read the subtitles or something like that. That irks me to the irkiest
degree. And all these celebrity content channels that I've seen right now, like for example, I was curious after seeing the Michael Jackson documentary to go and watch some of the original films that he was recreating. You know, they always called them short films, not music videos, because the songs might be 3 minutes long, but the videos were 6 minutes long, right?
Short, yeah.
And they have commercials before them. You know? And,
well, they got to monetize the web.
Right.
How do we do that?
Right. Well, we don't want to do it. No, well, we do want to do it, but we want, you know.
We can't work for free forever.
Right, but.
I know.
But, you know. That advertising model.
Yeah, kind of sad.
Okay, so we are having a production meeting on the air.
Yeah, we're having a philosophical production meeting.
And what about Google TV? Now, this is not getting the, certainly the press, like you were talking about, what was the thing with Comcast and NBC, net neutrality?
FCC, FCC issue.
But this is not getting the publicity that did, because after all, the government just basically folded.
In a house of cards.
Yeah, with Comcast, NBC. But apparently, behind the scenes, Google TV's fate is being decided by the FCC
right now.
And it is supposedly a really heated, contentious, behind-closed-door battle where not a lot of leaks are getting out. Imagine that.
That's impossible.
The whole future of Google TV is being decided.
I think I have one video on Google TV somewhere.
And stop me if this sounds familiar, to what we were talking about with Netflix a few minutes ago, because issue the FCC is deciding is the basic survival of traditional content providers.
How about that? And yet, if we don't sell advertising, how does the basic content provider survive?
Right.
Massages? We trade massages? Is that how we do it?
That's bartering.
Yeah. Okay.
That's where we're heading anyway with everything. It's all about appreciation. Levels of appreciation.
I'll trade you a massage.
Right.
There's a guy on Craigslist.
You know, when I did... I'm sorry, please.
No. Guy was doing Reiki therapy for blogging on Craigslist. Look it up.
When I was a dream detective... When I used to do dream consulting
Inception.
Work... There was someone who... really, really had some big stuff that was coming up through dreams and needed to bounce this. And I always would have people submit their dreams to me in writing first, And then we would work them, and just to see, you know. And so I said, yeah. And the person really couldn't pay, but was a professional licensed massage therapist.
Ah.
So there was a barter. There was a straight barter.
How many massages did you get?
You know what the thing is? I'm not a big fan of getting touched. So it really was like, I said I would do it because I wanted the person to feel okay. And so I did, but I took the minimum amount possible in order to make it seem like it was a barter.
Can't you just pass that over? I love massages. Oh my God. I saw Black Swan yesterday, and my favorite scene is her getting body work. Like where her hands up in her diaphragm and her ribs are cracking and all of that.
I hated that.
Oh my God. All I missed was like, oh yeah, I just want really great body work done on me. That's all. That's all I want. Because that's why I took modern dance in the first place, was just to get my ankles cracked.
But you know, this whole branding and the importance of having anchor so that people know you're there explains to me why like Discovery Communications would put $50 million into fledgling Oprah Winfrey Network to try to keep it afloat. You know, because it's just tanked.
Yeah,
Because she is
Oprah,
and it is a brand, and it is a market, and there's got to be a way to do it. And the fact that Oprah Winfrey Network has been flailing is just the most unbelievable thing to me.
Yeah,
because it was all based to me on kind of an ego based decision
brand
that they made early on that was the dumbest thing because it was not at all about riding the horse in the direction it was going. And
it's like going 360.
And when I compare Oprah Winfrey to a horse, I again, with all due respect to horses. But the thing is, they said that they wanted to dominate nighttime.
Oh, right.
So that's what it was. They wanted nighttime programming. And instead of realizing the daytime programming was up for grabs. Are you kidding me? An Oprah Winfrey Network that was all original content during the daytime?
Yeah. And how many shows a spin-off? Dr. Oz, Dr. Phil? How many doctors came out of that freaking show?
Instead of saying we need to make nighttime programming. And here's the other thing is, you know, but they said, oh, well, you know, a lot of our target audience, they do work, so they can't watch daytime. Okay, how many people TiVo their favorite daytime shows and watch those at night instead of nighttime programming?
Some, I would guess.
I would think a lot of people.
Because I watch all my night shows during the day.
Eh? Interesting.
See? Yeah. That's when Letterman comes on.
But it's just, you had it. You had the queen of daytime television.
And this myopic view, is it there have... Do you think it's ego-based, or do you think it's just that people don't really understand what made them successful? Is it the Wachowski brothers all over again?
Maybe you're right. So insulated to a certain degree that you don't understand the economic model you're proving, possibly.
Right. Yeah. So that you're just listening to all the hype and bull and yes men around you that you think, oh, yeah, my 10,000 workers can't be wrong.
I guess that's got to be it. I mean, and I guess that has to explain to a degree why stardom is such a difficult thing to maintain, that no matter how big the box office star, they will fall.
Yeah,
they will all. I mean, you know, Burt Reynolds goes 5 years in a row as the number one box office draw in the late 70s and early 80s. Within a few years, he can't
pay his
rent. He can't get a feature film.
Right.
And yes, other issues might go into it, but this happens again and again and again. How many times was William Holden a box office draw, and then a few years later, box office poison? I mean, his career came around like 3 or 4 times.
Katharine Hepburn's another great example of that.
Exceptionally rare is the person that's the box office draw all the way through. And, I mean, Clint Eastwood is one.
Yeah.
But he is such the rarity, as we've talked about, though, which is nobody understands the icon that is Clint Eastwood like Clint Eastwood.
That's true.
And one of the key reasons is because he never seemed to identify with it. He knew that it's a role separate from who he is, and he has clearly a very real understanding of who he is.
And come to terms with it, because clearly he didn't like it when he was probably doing Every Which Way But Loose, him and an orangutan. You know, that was probably that self-loathing of this icon that he already knew, and then ran off to be mayor of Pebble Beach.
To be a citizen.
Yeah, to go be a citizen, to actually serve the community for a bit and duck out of films altogether. And then...
Which he hated as well, but he said, look... We have to keep the idea of citizen politician alive.
Right.
Somebody's got to do that.
And I think that probably grounded it with the realizing that, you know, and that probably brought him back in force, I would think. But like anything, he had to go through that to come out on the other side.
You know, in changing a branding, you did an episode of a new TV series for Cinemax, right?
Yes.
Femme Fatales.
Femme Fatales.
Written and produced by...
Steve Kazir and Mark...
Steve, of course, was a guest on the Chillback Hollywood Hour that we hope to make available again as soon as possible.
Yes.
But what was really interesting about, in the wake of that, hearing you tell about the show, the report that HBO is, you know, issued no uncertain terms, they're killing off Skinemax.
Yeah.
The old Skinemax model.
And picking up those things. So that's moving to HBO.